reserve any time for rebuttal?
If I could reserve 5 minutes, Judge. It's been some time since I was here, so I wanted to get acclimated.
Good to see you again, counsel.
Judge Michael Lee, representing Mr. Mathis, may it please the court. While your last case was one dealing with statutes, this one deals with facts, and I think very narrowly, this is a very small issue. The Commonwealth and I both have put together briefs that I think deal with exactly the law. I don't think that that's in question. But we have a vast difference in our interpretation of how the facts are in this case. I would characterize the Commonwealth's arguments largely as but for Mr. Mathis's noncompliance, there would be a seizure here. Now, there's an argument that they make that indicates that, well, totality of circumstances. But when we look at those circumstances, we have a white Lexus, and smoking marijuana is the call that the officer receives. It's not corroborated anyway. He arrives, sees a white Lexus, and he tells Mr. Mathis this. He parks, partially blocks. There's some form of egress, but the officer even indicates that some of it's blocked off. Can't go the direction he came, but there is still a way for him to back out and drive off. This is around midnight. There's no indication that this is an area of high crime activity or anything like that. But I think the most telling issue in dealing with the idea of whether or not this retained a consensual flavor was when the officer told him to close the door. He not only told him to close the door, and we'll get to the other ones first that happened before that, but he came around the car. I think those actions in and of themselves...
He meaning who came?
The officer, excuse me, Judge. The officer not only directed him to close the door, but he came to the other side, presumably, and I think the inference is, to enforce and to keep him in the vehicle. So turning to, I think, the real issue in this case, and that is whether or not there was or wasn't compliance on behalf of Mr. Mathis. The Commonwealth wants to indicate that we're mischaracterizing in some way, the nature of his conduct. The two cases we cite most often are Jones and Beasley. The thing I'd ask the court to do is think about both of those cases three times. In both of those cases, three times, the officer directed them to do the same thing. The same thing. Keep your hands where I can see them. Put your hands on your lap. And each time, that defendant in those cases ignored that. Here, Mr. Mathis was given three directives. And remember, the officer even testified on the stand that his tone of voice was directive in nature, and I think the trial court accepted that. The first one was, get your hands out of your pockets. Understandable for officer safety, but again, we're in a consensual encounter. Well, he did that. He complied. He rolled down the window. Presumably, his testimony was to ash his cigarette. Officer directed him, roll up the window. He complied. He rolled up the window. Same thing with the door. He was ordered to the door. That's when the officer came around. But he complied with each and every one of these.
Did he comply with closing the door?
Judge, I believe I've looked through the record. I can't tell the court that there's a point in the record where I asked that question, whether it specifically did or didn't.
Viewing the record in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth.
And in doing that, Judge, I can't tell you that the record supports that he did that. I don't think
so
the
did.
Record. Well, I don't think the record supports that he didn't do anything. That anything else happened as a result of that. There was no testimony as to whether he did or didn't close the door. But that direction was certainly given. And I think if you look at the very facts of the case, the officer approached the other side. He indicated he had to remove him from the vehicle. So I think by inference, there's evidence that, again, he complied. He certainly didn't exit the vehicle. There's no testimony of that. And I don't think the officer indicated anything to the fact that he disregarded what the officer said at that point. There's no affirmative evidence.
Well, doesn't the record support the fact, though, that the officer came around to the front? He told the defendant to close the door. He came around the front of the car. He looked through the front window and saw what he thought was a gun, and then told the defendant to get out of the car.
Yes, Your Honor, but I think there's one other piece, which is he indicated that you could not see from the side that firearm. So my understanding of the record would be that he came to the side, was looking, couldn't see it, shined his light in through the front of the windshield, and that's when he was able to observe it.
Well, if he came around to the side and couldn't see it, the door would have to be open, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't think so, Judge. I think it would be the same thing. He could shine it in from the side. The vantage point apparently was, but from the side of the vehicle, it was not observable, but from the front windshield it was.
And what's the relevance of that?
I'm not sure that it was, except that again, the officer came around to the point where, again, he was blocking Mr. Mathis. He was to the side of the door, which I think is in some way significant. But if we go back to the very beginning of this, everything that he was asked to do, and with the possible exception, because we don't have a record that accurately reflects whether he did or didn't close that door, all the rest of those showed he did comply with what the officer asked him to do. Had the officer asked him to sit still, put his hands in his lap, and then he didn't do that, I would agree that these other cases are directly on point as
well,
to him.
Is it significant, though, that he keeps doing various things, even though they're different or distinct? He's doing different things.
But I think that the issue is it's not whether or not he's doing other things, but whether he's complying with the direction of the officers. Is he submitting to the officer's direct order? And the question is here, does the officer have the ability, because does he have reasonable articulable suspicion to be able to give those orders? And so if he's giving an order and he's complying...
I guess the point is, if he's feeling free to do each of these things, does that support sort of a consensual nature as opposed to something that you're arguing is, which is more tantamount to a seizure? That's what I'm asking. If he's able to do these things and feels free to do them, because he's not just doing the same thing, he's doing one thing, then he changes to another thing, then he does another thing.
Right, and I think the idea is that whatever he's doing, it's quickly counteracted by the officer. The officer says, get your hands out of your pocket. He immediately complies, and there's no indication he goes back into his pockets or does anything else. In the same nature, he rolls the window up. There's not any indication he tries to roll the window out and do anything. He does different discrete acts.
But if that's a consensual encounter, I think consistent with what Judge Malvo is trying to say, if that's a consensual encounter, it's no different than when you have a consensual encounter and the officer asks questions and the defendant continues to answer those questions. If it's consensual in nature, then it doesn't matter. It doesn't change the nature of the encounter.
I understand, I think, what the court's arguing. I think that the biggest issue with that is that...
We're just asking questions to try and see where you're coming
from.
No,
I understand. And I think the problem is that when he's in the car, the officer's there, and the officer's giving him directions, he's complying with those directions. And the question is that because he doesn't have a problem doing it, or because it's consensual in nature, or because of the circumstances?
Right, so then you look to all of the other factors.
And you look to all the other factors. Now, we don't have to say, well, is it, do we have a number of officers? Are they pointing weapons? But we do look at some of those things. His egress was blocked a little bit. There was a particularized description given to him, so he understands at this point that he's suspected of wrongdoing. He's sitting in a white Lexus, and he has a smoking something. Now, the officer doesn't have any reasonable suspicion. There's no odor of marijuana, that thing. But if I'm sitting in a vehicle, the officers are there, it's midnight, it's dark, they partially blocked my exit, and they're saying, you're in a white Lexus, and we have a report of a white Lexus smoking marijuana, and I start giving you direction, again, not request, sir, would you please? The officer says direction and tells him, do this, do this, do this. And then again, the last one, he comes around the vehicle And when he comes around the vehicle, it's not just a mere request. He's changing his attitude, his position. Again,
well,
I would argue
the vehicle,
to affect
he's
that.
He's not asking or directing the appellant to do anything at that point. He's already given whatever...
He's given the direction, Judge, but I think that the idea is, as far as whether this is consensual or not, when he comes around the vehicle, again, that evidence is intent.
But other than wearing his uniform, what is it he's doing that is indicating any request or desire for the appellant to submit to what he's doing?
I'm not sure if I
understand. I understand you're looking at it in total, but I'm asking a very discreet question. When he walks around the car, he's not directing the appellant to do anything. He's not prohibiting him from doing anything at that point.
Well, my argument would be very simply is that he directs him, close the door, and moves towards and around the vehicle towards that door.
But we don't know if that door's open or closed.
That's
so
correct.
So what I'm asking is, his walking around, how does that in any way change this from the Commonwealth perspective as a consensual encounter into something that's not?
Well, again, I think the thing is you can both look at this as inferring that he was going to get out of the car, that he was going to ask it, that he was going to do something, and that the officer's direction and his movement about the car would have prevented the defendant from doing any of those things. He didn't. There's no evidence that, in fact, he was noncompliant with the direction to close the door. Either.
So from the laundry list of things we look at to determine if a consensual encounter changes into a seizure of some form, you're relying on the tone of voice of the officer indicating compliance is required.
I think that in the circumstances of the actual encounter, at night, in a parking lot, with an officer's car parked behind him where it somewhat blocks the exit, and then the nature of the directive tone, and then followed up with, and again, the movement that I mentioned.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court.
Good morning again, Mr. Uberman.
Good morning. David Uberman on behalf of the Commonwealth. This appeal presents a situation that began as a consensual encounter and eventually evolved into probable cause to arrest. As the court referenced those factors that the court examines in these types of encounters, the number of police officers, whether guns were drawn, the time of day, whether there's police misconduct.
What about tone of voice to indicate that compliance is compelled?
Your Honor, I don't think, I did look out there. I have not found a case that expressly says the officer's tone of voice in and of itself, can create a situation where a citizen encounter is removed from consensual into detention.
But it is a factor.
But yes, absolutely.
And along
absolutely.
With directives also being a factor.
It is, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to
So you're saying it just doesn't rise to the level under these circumstances?
Correct, because given the totality of the circumstances, which is what the court looks at. So, for example, in the Jones case, or in Beasley and Jones, the court recalls that was a case where the defendant continuously reached for the floorboard, and the second or third time he did it, he ultimately did it three times, but at least the second time, the officers instructed him to stop doing that. They didn't ask him to stop. They didn't do whatever in the court. And that instance did not find that it had been removed from a consensual encounter. Essentially, what the defendant has established is that his will was overborne. In this case where the officer, this is not a traffic stop. The officer has not activated his lights and sirens. He's parked away from the vehicle where he said that, true, the vehicle could not exit from one direction, but it could exit from another. And I think that the instances of conduct related by Mr. Mathis were more properly viewed as a continuing pattern of defiance, as rather than discrete instances of compliance. So instead of, well, the officer asked me to roll up the window and I did it. The officer asked me to stop putting my hands in my pocket and I did it. The officer asked me to close the door and I did it. Instead, this is a continuing pattern of attempting to, as far as the Commonwealth is concerned, to secrete something outside of them. He's making furtive movements at the very least. And he's not complying with the officer's request to stop doing that. The officer at that point, on page 39 of the appendix, he says he shines a flashlight through the front windshield after he's told Mr. Mathis to close the door. And at that point, the officer was clear. He said he started out as a casual conversation. But at that point, he did direct the defendant, Mr. Mathis, to close the door. And I agree the record doesn't exactly state whether the door ended up being closed or not. It would be the Commonwealth's position that, frankly, it doesn't matter because it was the opening of the door that informed the officer's belief with respect to the intent of the defendant. And in this case, what you have...
So at that point, is it a seizure or is it a consensual encounter?
Your Honor, it's the Commonwealth's position that it remained a consensual encounter until the officer shined his flashlight on and saw the grip of that gun beneath the seat. At that point, there was at least reasonable suspicion. I mean, it could have been that Mr. Mathis was a concealed carrier and that he lawfully had the firearm. But if that's the case, the officer knows there's no reason to hide it. So he's already going to have some suspicion in his mind that's going to be an illegal firearm.
And that's
firearm.
When he does the Terry stop to confirm or dispel whether that person lawfully has a firearm or not.
Correct. And he very quickly moved the probable cause. At that point, he grabbed Mr. Mathis's wrist, ordered him out of the car for his own protection. He'd seen a gun at that point. I think the officer was well within his rights to do so.
And the record does support the fact that despite the first two statements, orders, however you want to define them, the defendant continued to do things. The third thing of which he did after rolling up the window was open the door.
Correct, Your Honor.
So that could be reasonably concluded to mean that the defendant was going to leave, which he thought he might be free to do, although we know from the evidence of what the defendant said, he wanted to flick a cigarette. But the officer obviously didn't know that.
No.
So at that point, it seems that the defendant himself was indicating that he felt free to leave.
Possibly, yes, Your Honor. Yeah, I agree. At that point, if he's opening the door, it's similar to the long line of cases from the U.S. Supreme Court that say, listen, if you are in direct defiance of a police officer, your will has not overborne. You have not been seized because you have not submitted to lawful authority. So I agree, Your Honor. I agree. A show of authority without submission is simply not a seizure. For example, in the Beasley case, which involved reaching into a console and other additional furtive movements, this court there held that the defendant was not seized until he actually submitted to the officer's command to stop moving his hands, which the defendant ignored. So the brief temporary compliance did not transform a consensual encounter into a seizure there, and it's Commonwealth's position that that's analogous to what happened here until the officer saw that gun, at which point it became probable cause, or at the very least reasonable suspicion, if not probable cause. And again, the Commonwealth would just respectfully suggest that to the extent that Mr. Mathis is arguing that he had a series of events with which he complied with the officer's request, that's a distorted account of what actually happened, that you have an officer asking him to essentially stop doing what he's doing, stop moving around, stop moving your hands, stop rolling the window up, stop opening the door, and that at each opportunity Mr. Mathis refused to do so. So at the very least, he didn't submit to the authority, which means there was no seizure. And the alternative, it was a consensual encounter until the officer saw the gun, at which point it became, at the very least, a Terry stop. And unless there are any additional questions, I'll rest on the remainder of argument set forth.
Thank you, Mr. Uberman.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Lee, you have a few minutes left.
Yes, thank you, Judge. And I think the key is that the Commonwealth wants to characterize these as analogous and that he's doing the same thing. And that's the point in both Jones and Beasley. They were doing exactly the same thing. This officer didn't. And the Commonwealth wants to characterize this as him ignoring or disregarding what the officer said. In fact, he did exactly the opposite. He did exactly what the officer asked him to do. If he was being cavalier about this and he didn't care what the officer said and he was showing independence, why did he roll the window up? Why did he stop digging in his pockets? I would submit to the court that the reason he didn't do it, it was midnight, he was there with an officer who told him, we got a report of somebody in a white Lexus smoking marijuana. He's sitting in a white Lexus smoking something. Does he feel free to leave?
What about opening the car door after the first two, quote, directives?
Well, the officer didn't say, stay still, don't move. The officer didn't.
Insofar as the ability of feeling free to leave.
Well, and again, he indicated very clearly his testimony was that he wasn't going to leave, that he was trying to
take the evidence in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth. We would disregard that statement, wouldn't we?
Well, you certainly can. But I think that if we look at it, the fact that he opened the door, there's no indication that he did try to leave. And so he's complying specifically with the directions that he's being given. And he's doing so in a situation where, again, he's been identified as potentially a suspect by what the officer is told him. White Lexus, smoking marijuana. He's in a white Lexus, smoking something. He's asked discreet things to do. Stop pulling them in your pockets. Roll up the window. He clearly does those things. The fact that he might do something else that the officer didn't tell him doesn't mean that he's ignoring the officer. In fact, he has complied twice with what the officer asked him to do. The Commonwealth wants to say that he's ignoring it. He's not doing what the officer asked. Had the officer in these other two cases, Jones and Beasley, had that been the directive here, Commonwealth's exactly right. The officer never asked him to do that. Everything that the officer asked him to do, he did, and he was in a situation in which no reasonable person would expect that he had a choice to do otherwise because of those two things. The officer didn't say stay. There was no indication that that he didn't stay in the car. So in this circumstance, the officer's telling him specifically, do this, he's doing it, and he has reason to believe that he has to do it because of the circumstance of the interaction where he's being told, white Lexus, smoking marijuana. He's in a white Lexus, smoking something.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
We will come down and greet counsel, and the next case will be Norman Michael Roberts versus Commonwealth.